Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeedy. It is the Boomer and the Babe Show coming to you, as the announcer voice said, from the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, coming to you live on Tuesday, September 6, 2011. And we'll be getting to our guests in just a moment. But before we do that, I want to remind everybody and all of our listeners at the Boomer and the Babe what they're involved in, what we're involved in. In addition to this radio program, we publish many books, e-books, and our e-book authors have their own shows on the Boomer the Babe Network right here on Blog Talk. We invite you to listen to those as well. We produce videos, promotional products, consult for small businesses. We are truly a multifaceted multimedia marketing company, and you can contact us via our website at www.boomerandthebabe.com. That's boomerandthebabe.com. I'm Pete Peters, and Deborah is preparing to go on a trip. She's going to be leaving on Wednesday and won't be back till Saturday. She's going to Salt Lake City for a meeting with an organization that she's involved in. So she's putting the finishing touches on some projects, and she's also preparing herself to go on that journey for us. So it's going to be me and our guest. Our guest is Jack Dermody. As Jack says in his bio, Jack has been around the block since graduating from UCLA with an MA in Applied Linguistics. Jack has transformed human communication and personal relationships for 30 years through language and psychology. The material he delivers is a careful distillation of 2,000 years of social science. He is a professional trainer, facilitator, and consultant. Beyond Four Windows, his work focuses on team building, workplace communication, democratic process in the workplace, conflict management, stress management, violence prevention, civil treatment, self-esteem, and personal development. Jack has his hands full. His clients include top management of corporate and government institutions on five continents, educational institutions, foundations, small businesses, and thousands of individuals. The best place to meet Jack is one of his customized workshops, which he will be doing via the Phoenix Business Journal next week, and we're going to talk about that as well. Jack, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show. I'm out of breath.
Wow, I'm out of breath, too, with all those thousands of things that you read from my own bio and the 78 million from your intro. I'm scared to death, Pete.
Well, believe me, they don't know where we are, so they're not going to come after us today. Well, if Deborah were here, Jack, she'd ask us, or ask you rather, to give us a 2-minute movie of what and who and why a Jack Dermody is. Am I pronouncing right, Jack?
Very well. Very good.
Right. Good guess on my part. At any rate, prior to going to UCLA, where did Jack Dermody hail from, and what is your background as an early young person?
Okay, good. I was afraid that was going to be a philosophical question. I can do dates and places. I'm originally from Southern California, even though I've been in Arizona almost 20 years. Heart and soul is California, and I'll take all the abuse you can dish out about it. And I grew up and went to college, ended up in the Peace Corps in West Africa. We just had our 45th reunion in Northern California, and that's where I started a whole career in applied linguistics, which had to do with language learning in about three different countries, and that was my major career, which I left about 12 years ago and have moved now into the training area after having been with so many companies, government organizations, and the like. And I'm actually officially retired, but not really, because I love this work of dealing with personality assessments, helping people get along at work and make their teams more functional and their companies more productive.
Well, tell me a little bit right from the onset. We've got also, we already have a caller waiting online. I'll ask the caller to hold on for a little while longer before we get to take that call. But tell me a little bit about your work as a personality assessment student and purveyor, and how does that fit with the killer sales approach that you're going to be teaching and for the business journals?
Well, the short version of it is I got in it originally because about 20 years ago, a psychologist gave me one of those Myers-Briggs temperament sorters to take, and the results showed I should be working in personnel in some government organization. So I tossed it away thinking it was pure hooey, just a bunch of voodoo, because I had never envisioned myself doing such a thing. It took me many years to finally figure out that human resources organizations have a training division, and that I finally found it in the last years of my working career. We're in such an organization, I should have paid attention to what the Myers-Briggs had to offer. So that was the beginning. Now, from the reason I'm doing a killer sales team workshop next week is born in the fact that I would say that as a customer, I'm only treated the way I'd like to be treated probably about 10% of the time. And I think if organizations knew a little bit more about where their customers and prospects were coming from, they might see they'd stick around longer as customers, and they might be more open to your sales pitch in the early stages.
Very good. So now let's tell everybody quickly right at the top of the show, what is this killer sales training? Where is it going to be? It's two times next week. Is that correct?
Right. You can choose Tuesday or Wednesday, September 13th or 14th. It's an all-morning program from like 8 to 12:30. It takes place at the Arizona Small Business Association Education Room, which is on Washington Street, just west of the 143. And the place to get information and register on it is at the Business Journal online. Can I give the online address?
Sure, go right ahead, please.
All right, so get your pencils out, folks. We'll probably repeat it a couple more times before the end. It's http://Phoenix, the city of Phoenix, phoenix.bizjournals. That's bizjournals.com/events. Now, I hope you didn't drive off the road writing all that down. That's all I hope.
There you go. Well, we've got this caller that's still patiently waiting with over 6 minutes now. I'm going to go right to the caller and see what they have and see what they want to ask you. We'll start with a call. This will be a little different than we normally do it, but I'm going to go to the caller here. Hello, caller. Are you there? Hello, caller. Hello, you're on the air with Jack. Well, apparently the caller doesn't want to talk. We're going to have to call, take that one off air then.
All right. Sorry.
Okay. Looks like we have another gentleman or lady that's on the line. Let me try this next one. Hello, caller. Are you there? Hello, caller. Did you want to talk with Jack? Well, again, I guess we got a couple of shy ones. Well, we'll let that one go also. Well, there's nobody waiting now. Let's talk a little bit, Jack, about your four windows work. You focus on people's personalities. Explain what your four windows program is.
All right. One of the wonderful things that happened back in the 70s and 80s was the simplification of personality assessments. Before that, we had Carl Jung's work, the great psychologist, and then the mother-daughter team of Myers and Briggs, and they came up with a system that identified 16 personality types. Now, that's great for finding a career, for hiring people, for really getting into, you know, the depths of a person's DNA of a personality. The problem with that is most people see the system and their eyes glaze over because it kind of looks like a chemistry chart. But then came along David Kersey, who simplified it to four personality types, which is really the most basic way to look at things in a way that you and I can understand, that the CEO and the bricklayer all in the same room can see quite quickly significant differences among these four types of personalities. Now, what makes this a little different, I said the word DNA from other systems, is that this is based on the fact that we're often born with our personalities. And probably 30 to 50% of who we remain pretty much the rest of our lives is inborn. And those who've had two or three or four children know this, because at least one child could not possibly have come through your loins. They're just different, you know. So the personality is expressed in four different, you know, descriptions what I call four windows. Now, that was simplified further by a guy by the name of Don Lowry, who assigned colors to the personality types just to make it even simpler for everybody. And just in a sum, in a 30-second presentation of what they are, a green person is all about knowledge and competence. A blue person is all about idealism, about harmonic relationships with people. An orange person is someone who takes risks, is in totally into personal freedom, and so forth. And then finally, the gold person, which is half the world, are into being responsible, rules, policies, being dependable, and the like.
Well, that's pretty much basically what I've seen in any number of assessment pieces that I've been involved in over the years in sales and so on and so forth. And it's they all have their own little twist, don't they? But in many respects, a lot of them are very similar.
That's correct.
Well, we've got a caller back, and I don't know if it was one that was on before, but let's try this again and see if we can have this caller talk to you.
All right.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. Would you like to talk to Jack?
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. You're on live with Jack.
Oh, okay. I have a question for Jack. How long does it take to size up somebody's personality? Is there any easy, quick glance?
Well,
I mean, besides if they were wearing a swastika armband or their hair was dyed green, I mean... How do you size somebody up with a different color personality?
Well, thank you for that question. Well, let me tell you this. Some people are easy to determine rather quickly, particularly if they're extroverted. A blue person who is an idealist, for example, their hand gestures are soft and the hands are moving more or less like wings. They usually have a very open smile and are very approachable and very positive in just your first and they speak in a not all that fast necessarily. It just they're very welcoming in how they operate. So and that's just an example. I could give that for all the colors, their body language, and the like. However, if people are somewhat introverted, it might take a little bit more time. Now, let's say, for example, you're interviewing someone for a job and you're looking for a good fit. And let's say on your team you're missing a green person. And a green, in other words, you want someone who likes to do research, really likes to study, really likes to, be known as the expert in things. And you're missing somebody like that. So in the job interview, you can ask a simple question like, well, what's your ideal work environment? If we give you everything you want, what would it be like? And a green person will probably tell you right away they want resources, they want independence to a great extent, to be able to agree with the boss on the goals, but to be left alone, to do the research that they need to do. It might even mention things like short meetings, good research, competent people, and the like. So those are just two examples for you.
Yeah, that explained it. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Well, thanks man.
Thanks for calling.
Right.
Jack, along with what you were mentioning to that caller, this process could also be used. I'm making this assumption, and I'm saying as if I really know this. This is scary. But if you're interviewing for the job, you can also use this assessment and try to determine who and what the person is that is conducting the interview, whether or not they're the person that's going to hire you. But you can use this assessment to your advantage as a prospective employee, can't you?
Give me a little more example of what you're saying in terms of what giving someone at
All I'm suggesting is that I'm going in for a job interview, and
right.
I want to be able to read's probably the wrong word, but I want to be able to ascertain what this boss is going to be like as a boss. And
right.
If I knew these personality aspects as you have presented them or do present them, I might be better served that way by knowing whether or not I, as an employee, can see this as a good fit, because I might be working for somebody that's diametrically opposed to the way I like to do things.
Well, and that is so important, as you probably know. People don't quit companies, they quit bosses.
Right, right.
I've got a family member in such a situation right now. Well, back to the interview. I get one of the biggest laughs in the workshops when I talk about what was I going to say? Let's get back to the interview. The interview is first of all generally a gold situation, which is it's highly structured, and unfortunately, a lot of us kind of have to lie in the interview because of the structure. You never know, especially if it's a panel that's interviewing you. They want to know you're dependable. They want to know you've done what you say you do. They want to know you can follow orders. They want to know you have respect for authority and hierarchy. So often we end up, providing these gold responsible answers. And the joke that I often make in the workshop is, well, let's listen to what's important to blue people. Blue people want to have soft music, plenty of space, plenty of social events, want to be able to talk on the job, relax a little bit, and enjoy work as much as they enjoy their home. If they were honest, that's what they would say, but they're not allowed to say that. But back to your question. So one thing is the odds are pretty good that the people interviewing you, you want to approach them with all four colors. In other words, the green people will need to see that you're competent. The gold need to see that you care about authority. The blues that you're going to be a pretty good person to have as a colleague. And the oranges, are you going to be any fun sort of person? And you can edit your preparation for an interview based on, have I covered my bases? Are people of all of these types, going to see me? And then to answer your question more specifically, Pete, is there's usually a question at the end, which is, do you have any questions for us? And that question, as bold as it sounds, really can get some nice results as far as finding out what the team is like and what your boss may be like. And the question is, hey, guys, often when people finish these interviews and they don't get the job, you'll get a phone call, and the phone call will be, what happened? And usually the answer is what? The answer is, we had a certain fit we were looking for. So I'd like to ask you now, ladies and gentlemen, could you give me a little description of what you feel would be a good fit for your team? And see what you get.
Well, it's just like the head coach explaining why it was that they let the player go, and it was, well, we've decided to go in a different direction.
Yeah,
It's amazing how many times they decide to go in a different direction.
Well, and what's amazing is that they go through all this folderol to be fair and to have equal input and so on and so forth, when in effect there's usually one person deciding, and often the answer is, well, we like you or we don't like you, and we don't want to have to explain why.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's all you have to know is it's not you.
No. And wouldn't it be nice to say that?
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you get, I think you're a lot further ahead by saying, you know, I'm sorry, it just not doesn't work, it's not you. And there's really not much you can say to change that. We've decided no. It's over. Move on. Go try Joe Schmo down the street. He's hiring too.
Right.
Aren't people afraid to be labeled or pigeonholed by these personality types?
You betcha. Yeah, I'll go into a workshop and people will actually come up to you and say that, and you know, with a, you know, almost with a red faced, a little bit upset, a little bit worried about us entering their space and so forth. And so I spend the first, 5 or 10 minutes allaying those fears. And I do that by saying, well, first of all, don't label yourself. Don't pigeonhole yourself here. What you did is you took a survey and you answered questions in such a way that you prefer the strengths, or you have the strengths, you believe, more in this temperament type than another temperament type. So that's how you viewed yourself. But even then, you don't want to say, well, heck, you know, is this how I am and who I am will be the rest of your life? I say, no. What you want to do is say, now I have a good question. You know, is this true? You know, I'm going to sit here in this workshop and see how much of this is true and relevant to me. And then the next question you ask yourself is, how can this help? And if you and then be totally open-minded and flexible. And by the way, you're sitting at a green table now. You may decide that that second color you chose, orange, is really where your people are. So go there. And it is that way. Their fears usually are, alleviated. And the next thing is, the biggest surprise to them usually is almost no one ever changes tables. And secondly, that their own assessment of themselves was pretty darn accurate.
Now, this workshop that you've got coming up with the Business Journal, it's going to be at the ASBA Center, correct?
Right.
Okay. Tell me a little bit of what that's all about and how to personality. The title of it is Killer Sales Team, and how do personalities fit into that?
Well, let's get back to, you know, my own motivation of, you know, saving the world from being disregarded by salespeople.
Okay. All right.
A sales team, I think many organizations need to learn and realize, is that it's not just your sales folk. It's your it's your top management. What is their attitude about how customers are treated, followed by the sales manager, followed by the sales team. But then in parallel with the sales team is customer service, anybody who's on the phone, anyone who's in fulfillment, and anyone who relates to the customers in any way whatsoever. The whole team is a killer sales team, or it's a dead team. Let me just give you an example. I had a company where the fulfillment people usually wanted to kill the salespeople. The salespeople sold the dream, and the fulfillment people tried to fulfill. But the way that translated was, the salespeople sold the nightmare, and the fulfillment people had to come up with a dream. So what was interesting about those two groups is that the salespeople tended to be some combination of orange, green, and blue, which are all very change related, all very excitement supporting, all very systems maneuverable, whereas the fulfillment people were some combination of green and gold. And these people were very task oriented, the type of people who wanted to get an order take it, fulfill it, and do a good job of doing so. The problem was the salespeople might exaggerate. They'd be sloppy with the figures. They'd be a little, you know, over-promising or under-promising or whatever. And so the fulfillment people who wanted to be responsible, do a good job, you know, felt inadequate, got blamed for things that they shouldn't have. So the whole purpose of the workshop was to put these people all on the same team as far as what the customer expected and how to communicate with one another much quicker and with much better detail, and allowing each to have the strengths and values that they care about. And we pulled that off with some really cool agreements that they came up with after that.
Now, let me tell you how I can relate to that. I've been years ago when I came out of college, I was selling retail advertising space. And some classified display advertising. Everything was display advertising. Mm-hmm. And I would go make a sales call. Somebody would agree to an advertising a contract for a particular length of time. I might be able to lay out some sort of a structure as far as how we wanted to move through this program with them and what the advertisements would be that would support that at the various times. Mm-hmm. I would put that together, and I would take it to the art department for spec layouts on the ads, and I'll say, this is what the client wants, make it so.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, because I felt that they were the professionals on that side, all I can do is draw stick figures, and they can do much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how infrequently the advertising program and the progression of ads came back. It wasn't even close to what I thought I had said, and wasn't even close at all to what the client had indicated they wanted.
Wow.
Now I think that was possibly some of this come from and go to stuff that you're kind of relating to. Is that possible?
Well, and I'll give you a very good example of, I'll bet somebody in that triangle, the customer, the fulfillment, the artists, and you, the salesperson, there is a goal person who needed to hear, how exactly do you want me to do that? And if there is a little bit too much vagary on anybody's end, you're in trouble. So, in other words, now where the team would come in for something like that would be, you know, if the company were big enough especially, is to have somewhat something of an editor or an overseer over a process like that. All right, salesman A brings specs, the signed by the customer or whatever, and hopefully that was clear, assigned to the artist, taking the specs and understanding them and somehow giving feedback that the understanding has taken place so that it can be fulfilled. Because ultimately that could cost the company a lot of money, loss of customers and the like, if the communication system isn't clear.
Absolutely. It is about the communication. And it's sometimes when you leave, what I discovered, that if you leave too much open for interpretation, you could find yourself up the river, up the proverbial river without the paddle, because you're just over there you're just treading water and with your hands in a canoe that's adrift, and it just causes all kinds of problems.
Well, and this is where I'm constantly selling gold people as part of any team, and the good news is gold people are half the world, but I can't begin to tell you how many organizations, because they find them a little annoying and too policy-ridden, find it difficult to have fun with them and the like. But the reality is that these folks, are going to put your feet to the fire and say, what the heck did you mean by that? And won't quit until you tell them. So.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There's got to be somebody there that is responsible for looking at that bottom line and making sure that the project is on track. And that
right.
sounds like it's the gold person.
Well, and let me tell you this is another beauty of treating the personality thing with some seriousness is because the different temperaments love doing things that the others do not. The greens, oranges, and blue would rather have their toenails removed without any kind of anesthetic over the detail work that golds do, doing that. And just the same way with the gold, they would, going out and doing a rah-rah program that a sales or marketing person would be the last thing in the world they'd want to do or do very well. So that's the beauty of the team concept.
Well, I know that to be absolutely true, not only because of the nature of the things that I've done in my work history, but the fact of when Deborah and I work together, there are certain things that Deborah does, and there are certain things that I do. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna say that we don't come to loggerheads every now and then, because we do. Not only do we work together, we live together.
Uh-huh.
But nonetheless, we do manage to work it out, because at some point in the process, one of us will have to. It just has to be that one of us will have to take somewhat of a back seat to the other's desires or ideas, because otherwise we'll never get anything done. And I think that cooperation thing is probably a great deal part and parcel of anything that you'd be talking about as well.
That's right. That's right, exactly. I've sort of made a vow to myself, I don't know, it must have been 5 or 6 years ago, that I would never, ever do a business alone again for that reason. Because I'll give you a mathematical, scientific reason. And that is, let's say my talents are what they are. I'm a shameless, creative facilitator, presenter. But I am the worst logistics person in the entire world. I mean, putting my shoes away is a challenge. For example, and so if you try to run a business by yourself, and what is business if not 80% logistics? I don't care what business you're in. And so I don't have a big business and I don't have employees, but what I do is I price my merchandise, my services, to include people for that project. So I hire my logistics, and it just makes business heaven again, so that's the lesson that I've learned, and that's one of the things I want to pass on at that killer sales team workshop next week.
Well, there's a lot of people that don't like salespeople at all. I mean you see that posted on the door, no sales, no salespeople, no soliciting, and they will just run the other direction. They will tell them to get the heck out of my store, don't bother me, whatever the case might be. Is there
right.
a chance that your program can change that attitude?
I did sales years ago for a major book company, and there was such a sign that the reason it bothered me was I had driven 150 miles to be at this place. California is a very large state. And this was a small little school district. So I walked in, and there was this enormous sign: salespeople do not knock, do not ring, do not call. We have all the books we need. Now, go away. And so I've thought about that much, over my life as to, all right, but I have the greatest product in the world. This weenie little school is probably using something that's 10 years out of date, is nowhere near as effective as mine. So, what am I going to do to get the attention of this group of teachers in this district? And so the nice thing about today's age is it's what does the customer want? They don't want salespeople, okay, but they need the product. So then the good news about today is there are 50 ways to get to the customer, their information, whether it's social media, attending the events that they go to, getting to know the friends in the organizations they belong to, everything from email to mailed samples, and this personality thing. Obviously, we have someone who's not very social, but probably very task-oriented. And so what type of research, what type of something would tweak their interest that wouldn't even look like a salesman. I guess I gave you a long answer to that, but I hope I answered that for you.
Well, it sounds as though the basic answer to that question is don't look like a salesperson and camouflage your purpose until it's too late.
Right. Well, the purpose there, you couldn't even get in physically. So obviously,
yeah.
You really had to be clever.
As a result of your program that you're going to be presenting for the Business Journal next week, can people safely assume that their sales will increase, their ability to make more sales will improve?
Boy, Pete, I would love to say, yes, you're going to be a millionaire within 6 weeks after attending my workshop. But here is what I can promise any organization is just based on the theory that 90% of your competitors are not doing this. And that is, let's just take a little example. Let's say you want to promote your radio business there on the blog thing you got, which I'm quite impressed with, by the way, with the technology you've got behind yourself and the beauty of your website and so forth. But let's say you want to get more people interested in appearing as guests or in having their own shows. And so the question I would ask any business was, okay, well, people who might possibly be interested, once they make that, you make the contact with them or they with you, what's going to matter to them if it seems they're interested that is going to get their attention and get them to buy in. Now, I'll just give you my own case here. Now, I met you at a conference, a networking event.
Correct.
The whole purpose was to network and just meet people and possibly meet a few contacts and the like. And for me, whether you knew it or not, you absolutely tuned in. You were introduced by someone I knew. You were full of you answered all my questions. You were very enthusiastic. You cared about me as much as whatever it is you were selling. And then as far as follow-up is concerned, there was a deadline concern. You leaped to meet this deadline by putting me first on this week, which is only a week from my own event. When I went on your website, not only was the program scheduled, you had my bio, you had my picture, you had an accurate description of what was going to happen, and everything was set up beforehand. As you know, is it just my checklist of you care about me was met. Now, there's a whole bunch of other people who are not like me. All they want to know is the price, when, why, where, and so forth, and don't give a rat's, you know what, whether or not you care about them.
Right, right.
But I'm the guy you show a little friendship toward, you know, and some enthusiasm, and I'm on board, you know. So there you go. So what you learn in the tools to create a killer sales team is to, you know, get your radar going about who you're dealing with and how well are you were doing. Let me give you just one more example. I always sing the praises of Discount Tire. Good Lord, you go into that place and their eye contact is right there with you, even if you're fifth in line. You know, they move those people, they seat you, they don't make you wait too long. I mean, they set records, you know, at every possible level, and they hit all four colors, all four temperament types. I don't care what color you are or whether you needed the research, which is amazing, as they have on their computers, of the various options you have for tires. The oranges, you're just going to love the speed at which you do it. The blues are going to love the care that they show you. And the golds, just see that everything is clean, organized, and well-managed. I mean, that checklist is supreme. So there you go. So the answer is, will you make more money? Will you have better sales? Yes, if you take this seriously and organize your organization around that knowledge.
Well, it's absolutely if. There's always a big if with any project as far as what you're looking to do and what you're looking to increase, whether it's sales, customer service, whatever it is. If you don't do it, it's not going to work just because you sat there for several hours and listened.
Right.
I mean, you have to implement. There's no doubt about it. You have to implement. Let's talk about these colors again. One question to you. What color are you?
My first color is blue. That's an idealist seeking harmonic relationships, whether it's at work, home, or wherever. I even have relationships with vending machines. You know, that's just me.
Oh, that sounds like a personal problem, Jack. So your first color is blue. What's you say as if by saying there's a first color, but there must be a second or possibly a third as well?
Well, we're all four colors, which is
okay.
Another way of getting, you know, of taking away your fears of being pigeonholed. And now there are some folks, I call them Renaissance people, who've got it all. And often I find they're a little older in life. They've had an awful lot of experience. They've purposely tried to improve themselves by gaining the new strengths, and often those new strengths are from the other colors. They're chameleons. They're smart. They're good at what they do. But the average Joe is strongest in the first two colors. Like my first two are blue and orange, which kind of makes for an ADD type of personality. And what that means is that right next to all this idealism is a need for action, personal freedom. So the combination is enormous open-mindedness and flexibility. The downside of that is difficult to focus. I'd rather multitask than sit on one thing for too long of a time. You know?
You're good as until the next bright, shining object comes along.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Although, those things I decide to finish, I do now at this age.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go over how people can sign up for your sessions again with the Business Journal. Go ahead and tell everybody one more time how that can happen.
Okay, get your pens and pencils out. Now, if you just forget everything, just Google Phoenix Business Journal and go to their events column, wherever that is on their thing. And my event is right on top, so you won't miss it. It's called Tools to Create a Killer Sales Team. And then so the exact address is the http://, I'm sure you're all familiar with that. The content of the URL is phoenix.bizjournals, and that's spelled bizjournals.com/events.
You sent me a copy of an email that you received. Somebody had sent you a question, a gentleman out of St. Louis. It says, it seems very frustrating to me to categorize myself with much confidence. As someone always interested in growth and self-improvement, he's asking, he's always trying to change himself to be more friendly or more or less spontaneous, or more organized, or more rational. So aren't many of us just naturally disrupting the very premise of the program?
How long is this program, Pete?
Well, it's on you, Jack. You sent me the email that he wrote.
All right.
You've got time. You've got time. Not a problem.
All right, okay. Well, no, it's not necessarily a long question. There has been a personality thing which has been very popular on the bookstore shelves for a long time. It's called Strength Finders. And the lesson from Strength Finders is that what are we doing trying to gather strengths in our naturally weak areas? For example, you're in school and you always get C's in math. Well, you're just not good at math. It's never fun. It's always, you know. And if you chose to, you could just get yourself a tutor and you could just bang your head against the wall and get A's in math if you want to. Now, so you've accomplished gaining that strength, but at what cost? And the cost often is that if you had been using your natural strengths that vigorously, you would probably soar geometrically in your success rate at whatever you were doing. So, for example, I'm a pretty good writer and speaker and a few other things. And if I spent all my time doing that, I should be able to hire someone to do the math type stuff. And so, you know, I can sail around in my life. And then that would be my response to the person who asked the question, is that, yes, a roadmap to increasing our strengths exists in our weaker personality types in our spectrum. But those things do help. They really do make us stronger, make us smarter, give us more discipline and the like. But taking what we naturally have and running with it, we're happier. That never feels like work. It brings us success, and we might not even feel we deserve that success. But because it is relatively easy. but that's the path to go, and he's talking about being confused and whether or not this is messing up. No, it's nothing about messing up anything. We're naturally who we are, and therefore any introspection about, you know, who we are and any effort to improve ourselves cannot be bad. The only thing would be to decide today, the wrong thing would be, well, I'm blue, but, you know, I'd rather be orange. Because oranges seem to have so much more fun. They date more. They ski better. They seem to be able to sell better as salespeople and so on and so on. I mean, but, you know, just like an ostrich can't be an elephant, you that kind of intervention on yourself is you can't win on that one.
Well, you don't know how pleased I am to hear you say that. Because I remember in my high school days, and it's hard to believe that I can remember that far back. But nonetheless, I remember taking the accelerated math courses, the geometry, mm-hmm. the algebra 2, the trig, and so on and so forth. And I'm sitting in these classes, sort of like choking this down like cod liver oil, and I just couldn't stand it. It was not what I wanted to do. I enjoyed the speech class. I enjoyed the more social aspects of classes and classwork and so on. Mm-hmm. But to sit there and try to figure out what is an equilateral triangle and what's a right angle, and what, I could care less. My dad was a draftsman at the time and an engineer, and I was never going to be an engineer. There's more than black or white to me. My dad was everything black, and it's either black or it's white. The light's on or the light's off. Mm-hmm. I live in the gray. I mean, there's a point at which the room is getting dark.
Right.
You see, there's a spectrum there. But he was on or off, yes or no, do it or don't. And that is not my personality. I mean, I am that way when I sell it. Either you want it or you don't want it. That's fine, and I'll just move on. But to run my life like that, it does not work, because I know that whatever the laws are. In other words, I abide by the natural law, right. But that doesn't mean that I have to live that way all the time as my choice of occupation, because comfortable. It's not comfortable for me, and I'm very glad to hear you say that. Go where your strengths are. Basically, isn't that it?
That's exactly right. The name of David Kersey's book is "Please Understand Me, Let Me Do My Thing." I have a woman who advises college students about what their majors are and what schools to go to, and so forth. And often what she's going against are children who are brought up in certain households, like it might be an engineer like your father, or it might be, a lawyer, or a family of lawyers and doctors. Or you got this kid who wants to play guitar, go to music school, take dance lessons, absolutely incomprehensible to the parents.
I know.
But that's the way it really has to go. And if they're smart, they'll, you know, interestingly, the math, the science, the whatever else is seemingly important in a good education will come out in whatever profession you get into. At some point, there's a science to it, and then when you care about the science that goes with it, you will do much better at it than at some subject completely outside of your natural tendencies.
Well, my poor father, rest his soul. There were many times when I'm sure I just frustrated the living whatever out of him, because I was doing things in areas that he no more wanted to be involved in than I can imagine whatever. But he seemed to have this one basic mannerism when it came to my telling him what my next plan is, and it's this thing about the head going side to side to side to side, and his eyes would roll up into his brow, and he says, "Good luck." that's where it was. But to his great credit, he never stopped me from doing anything. So, good, bad, or indifferent, whatever's happened has been on me and not on him, and I'm glad for that. Let's go a little bit more about people taking the survey. Can't they just read a book and figure it out? Why is it important to attend one of your workshops?
Well, almost all of the other temperament programs do have a survey online and a report that comes back to you that you can read. Or they'll even come to your place of work and have everybody take the survey and pass them out, take a few questions. But when I go back to these places and I ask, well, what did this do for you? How did this affect your corporate culture? And they will say, well, yeah, it was interesting, but it's interesting, but we've got other things to do. Joe back there likes it. You can go talk to him, you know. So what you're probably getting a little bit of a taste of it right now is it's the workshops I do are highly interactive. The people do projects together at their tables. Like even this one we're going to do, the tools to create a killer sales team. They're going to be designing, well, what types of people do they want to have on the team? Who are the rest of the people in the organization who can benefit the most when they get certain types of clients? How are they going to treat them? What is their customer management record going to look like, in terms of servicing prospects and customers in the future, so that their customers they know are going to get the treatment that they expect and deserve? I hope listening to that you get the idea that when we leave, it's just not a paper and a book to read. It's actually experiential, and as a result of that, people call me back to work with other teams. They refer me to colleagues in other industries, their vendors, even their creditors, for ways to get people to talk better together, plan together, and so forth. It's just the kind of thing that's sort of like a. If all you're giving them is a survey and a report, it's no different than one of those, if you're dating, these ladies bring you a survey from Cosmopolitan magazine to see if you're ready to date them, you know.
That's see if you pass muster.
Yes, exactly.
What was it that got you interested in personalities in the first place? I mean, how did you come to be involved in assessments of people's personalities?
Just from the essential please understand me notion that I experienced, and so many people will tell you, just ask any angry teenager, for example, or people who are at work and not tell you they're not appreciated by their boss, and people don't recognize how unique and special they are and what they have to offer, and don't even investigate to see what they have to offer and the like. So that just hits me to the core generally as an idealist. And my own personal story is, it's funny you mentioned your father was an engineer, so was mine. But actually, so was my mother. Have a very similar temperament to my father. And what you don't know is I was adopted. And I was certain that there was a village of entirely different people somewhere on the planet that I, you know, came from, where they played music and had a lot more fun in their lives than my parents did, and from my meager point of view. And so I did find my birth parents eventually, and the irony is that they were quite like my own adoptive parents. And so they were more reflective of the Depression generation than they were of any kind of temperament types, I think. But it was a result of just searching. And by the way, the biggest people who love this personality stuff are your blue people, followed by greens. And the oranges and golds come reluctantly, but if you do a good job, they understand it and will work with it.
Well, based on that statement, it sounds then that the baby boomer generation, the ones that everybody has heard about and read about at any rate, are the blues and the greens, because Lord knows the boomers have been searching for years. we've been searching for the answer. Is this all there is? We've been wondering and protesting and taking funky medications, self-medicating for many, many years, going back to Haight-Ashbury and the 60s and the 70s, and it's sort of like, you know, there's got to be an answer here somewhere. Now in older age, in the age that I am and younger, because I'm one of the more leading-edge boomers, they're searching again. They're still searching. They're searching for spirituality, and they're trying all kinds of alternative spirituality and the alternative health processes and so on. So it sounds like a lot of the boomers that you read about and you hear most about are probably greens and blues.
That is very perceptive of you, Pete, and I'll tell you why. In my early days of working with personality, I was sure that at the very least all the hippies were blue. Because they were very approachable. It was all about song and love and so forth. But the initiators of it were surely a combination of, as you read the stuff, are blue and green, the leadership of it. But the people who jumped in hook, line, and sinker, because it was an ongoing party, were the oranges, who were probably the most willing to go with the drugs and alcohol and the like, and because that's their nature. So it's the golds, and those three colors represent about half the world, and the other half are gold, who may or may not have participated very much. So there you have it, the temperament of the hippie generation.
There you go. Well, Jack, we're getting down to the short rows here on our program together. Why don't you go ahead and tell us, first of all, how people can get hold of you, and then one more time about how people can get involved in your seminar.
Okay, yeah, please get a hold of me. The email address is my last name, Dermody, which is spelled Dermody, at Cox, C-O-X, .com. To repeat, that's Dermody at Cox.com. My office phone is 602-237-5627. And trust me, I don't have that many raving fans that I can't take a couple of phone calls, you guys. So just call me. I love this stuff. I never get tired of it. And finally, to get information and to possibly register, and I hope you will, because I have a few seats left and I've got them waiting for you right now. Find out at the Business Journal. Just find Phoenix Business Journal through Googling, or type this address: http://, Phoenix dot bizjournals. That's bizjournals.com/events.
Well, Jack, thank you very much for joining us today. You've given our listeners a great deal of information to think about, and hopefully they'll come by and get involved in your seminars. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you information and conversation with Jack Dermody, all about personality types and the projects that he's involved in and the business journal event that's coming up next week. Be sure to check his website out also about that and the other things that he has that he's involved in. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. Check us out at www.boomerandthebabe.com. See everything that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Make sure that you have the second half of your life be as good or better than the first half of your life. Have a great day, everybody. I hope you enjoy the weekend, and we'll be back with more interesting guests as the week goes by. Please tune in.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.